You open your laptop on Monday morning. You have 127 new messages since Friday afternoon. You start scrolling. There's an email with the subject line, "Quick question," that contains seven paragraphs and asks you to compile data from five different sources. There's a reply all chain with 43 messages where you are CC'd on every single one, and you have absolutely no idea why you're on it or what you're supposed to do about it. There's an email that says, "Per my last email," in a tone that makes your blood pressure spike before you've even had your first coffee. There's an email asking for information that's already documented in three different places, but apparently it was easier for the sender to ask you than to look it up. There's an email with an attachment called "Final V3 Revised Actual Final .docx," and you genuinely don't know whether you're supposed to review it, approve it, or just acknowledge receipt. There's an email from 2 weeks ago that you meant to respond to, but it got buried, and now responding to it is awkward. There's an email with the subject line "urgent" that is absolutely not urgent. There's an email that should have been a 5-minute phone call, but has instead become a 12-message thread spanning 3 days with four people weighing in and nobody agreeing on anything. And it's 9:17 in the morning. You haven't done any actual work yet. You've just been processing email. And you'll spend another hour on it at lunch, and another hour before you leave, and you'll check it on your phone at dinner and before bed, and the cycle will repeat itself tomorrow. Does this sound familiar? If you're nodding right now, you're not alone. The average office worker receives 121 emails per day. They spend 28% of their working week just managing email. That's 11.2 hours per week, more than 500 hours per year. That's almost 3 full months of your working life, every single year, spent on email. And here's the thing that should make you genuinely angry. Most of that email shouldn't exist. Most of those messages are symptoms. Symptoms of broken processes, missing tools, unclear communication norms, and a fundamental misunderstanding baked deep into the culture of modern offices about what email is actually for. Welcome to Automate Office Work. I'm your host, Justin, and today we're going deep into email. An hour and a half, the full masterclass. We're going to cover the history of email, where it came from, and how it became the operating system of the entire business world. We're going to diagnose every single thing that's broken, and I mean every single thing. We're going to explain why the answer is not AI that reads and writes even more emails. And we're going to prescribe real concrete solutions, tools, frameworks, processes, and rules that you can start using this week. By the end of this episode, you'll see your inbox differently. You'll have a framework for fixing the processes that created the inbox in the first place, and you'll have a set of hard rules that make every email you do send sharper, shorter, and actually useful. Let's start at the very beginning. Part one, the history, how we got here. To understand why email has become the mess it is, you have to understand what it was actually designed to do. Because once you hear it, everything else in this episode will make perfect sense. The year is 1971. A programmer named Ray Tomlinson is working on ARPANET, the predecessor to the Internet, a computer network funded by the U.S. Department of Defense. He creates a program that lets users on different computers on this small network send messages to each other. He chooses the at symbol to separate the user's name from the name of the computer. The host. That at symbol is still in every single email address in the world today, more than 50 years later. The first email ever sent was probably something like QWERTYUIOP, the letters of the top row of the keyboard, a test string. Not exactly profound, but revolutionary. Here's what matters. Email in 1971 was designed to send short text messages between technical researchers on a network so small you could list all its users on a single sheet of paper. The user base was measured in dozens. Email was designed for asynchronous communication, sending a message that doesn't require the recipient to be available at that exact moment. Brief updates and notifications, sharing information, coordinating across time zones. Here is what email was not designed for. Storing data, managing projects, conducting complex negotiations, building consensus among large groups, tracking tasks and assignments, creating institutional knowledge, real-time collaboration, long-form documentation. Not one of those things. And yet, in offices across the world today, all of them run through email. Here's the key insight I want you to lock in before we go any further. Email is a transport mechanism, not a storage system. It's a delivery truck, not a warehouse. When you understand this, really understand it, everything that follows will make perfect sense. Through the late 70s and early 80s, email spread through universities and research institutions. The culture was informal and collaborative. You sent someone a message, they replied. That was it. Then came corporate America. Companies like IBM, Wang Laboratories, and DEC started building internal email systems, closed networks inside organizations. IBM had PROFS. Lotus had CC Mail. Microsoft had Mail. Suddenly, for the first time in business history, you could send a memo instantly. No typing pool, no physical inter-office envelope, no waiting for someone to walk it down the hall. The speed alone felt like a miracle. But here's where the first problem crept in. When email replaced the memo, it inherited all the culture of the memo. The memo had a to field, a from field, a subject, and CC, carbon copy, which in the days of actual typewriters and actual carbon paper meant I'm making a physical copy and sending it to this other person too. Email adopted all of this wholesale. And with the memo culture came memo politics. The CC was never just about information sharing. It was about covering yourself. See? I told finance. It's right there in my sent items. The CC became both weapon and shield simultaneously, and we've been living with that legacy ever since. The 90s changed everything. The World Wide Web exploded. The internet became a consumer product. Hotmail launched in 1996, Yahoo Mail in 1997, and businesses that had been running closed internal email systems found that their employees now also had personal email accounts. And suddenly, companies could email other companies, their suppliers, their customers, their partners. The closed garden opened up, and the volume began to climb. Here's a fact that should humble all of us. Business analysts were writing articles about email overload by the mid-90s. The phrase appears in academic papers as early as 1996. We have known this was happening for almost 30 years. We just refused to fix it. The 2000s brought BlackBerries. They brought the iPhone in 2007. And with mobile email, we made a cultural decision whose full consequences we would not understand until years later. We decided that email was always on. When email lived on a desktop computer in an office, there were natural limits. You went home. You left your email behind. But mobile email followed you everywhere. Dinner, the weekend, vacation, the gym, the bathroom, everywhere. The corporate BlackBerry became both a status symbol and a leash. Executives competed to show how available they were. The 11 p.m. email from the boss became normalized. And if the boss sent it, the expectation, never stated but always understood, was that you read it. Meanwhile, Gmail launched in 2004 with 1 gigabyte of free storage, an outrageous amount at the time, specifically so you would never have to delete anything. The message was, don't manage your email, just search it. Which sounds helpful until you realize it also removed any incentive to send fewer emails in the first place. Archive everything. Search for it later. The consequences. Send whatever you want, whenever you want, to whoever you want. No friction, no consequences. By the early 2010s, it was obvious something was broken. Slack launched in 2013, promising to replace internal email. Asana, Trello, Basecamp, Jira, project management tools that promise to get work out of the inbox and into proper systems. And for the teams that adopted them properly, they worked. Email volume genuinely went down. But for most organizations, these tools didn't replace email. They were added alongside it. Now you had email and Slack notifications, email and Asana notifications, email and Teams notifications. The Microsoft Teams rollout across corporate America in the late 2010s, and especially during the COVID pandemic, didn't eliminate email. It created a parallel universe of notifications next to it. The inbox got a sibling. The sibling was also a nightmare. Here we are. The average office worker receives somewhere between 100 and 121 business emails per day. They spend between 2 and 4 hours per day managing email. Email is the number one computer activity in most corporate environments, and almost universally, when you ask people how they feel about their email, they use the word drowning. We took a digital sticky note designed to pass short messages between a few dozen researchers on a tiny government network, and we turned it into the operating system of the entire business world. It was never supposed to do that. Part 2, where email actually is the right tool. Before we tear into everything email does wrong, let me be fair and precise, because email is not evil. Email is excellent for a specific, narrow set of things, and if we're honest about what those things are, we can stop using it for everything else. Email is genuinely the best tool we have for asynchronous communication with people outside your organization. You want to reach a vendor, a client, a journalist, a candidate, someone who doesn't share a Slack workspace or a project management system with you. Email is the universal protocol. Everyone has it. Nobody is going to give their supplier access to their Asana board just to send a purchase order. This is email doing exactly what it was designed to do, reaching someone on a different host using a universal protocol. Second, formal documentation and notification for external parties. When you need a paper trail that exists outside your organization, contracts, formal notices, confirmations, receipts, email is appropriate. It's admissible in court. It has timestamps. It works across every organization on earth. For formal external documentation, email has genuine strengths. Third, one-way broadcasts that require no response. The company newsletter. The announcement that the parking lot will be closed Thursday. The HR reminder about open enrollment. If you genuinely have information to push to a large group and you don't expect replies, email is an efficient broadcast channel. Fourth, simple single question exchanges with a clear end state. Can you make it at Tuesday at 2? Yes. That is a good email. 2 lines, 1 question, 1 answer, done. Clear purpose, defined resolution, no tracking required. Fifth, communication where the recipient's time zone makes synchronous contact impractical. If you're in Rotterdam and your client is in Singapore and it's 3 a.m. there, email is the right way to leave them a message. It respects their time and doesn't require them to be available at that moment. That is the complete list. External parties, formal documentation, simple broadcasts, simple single-turn exchanges, cross-time zone communication. Notice what is not on the right tool list. Project tracking, task assignment, data collection, approval workflows, IT support requests, HR requests, onboarding checklists, status updates, knowledge management, decision logging. None of those belong in email, and yet in most offices, all of them live there. I want to be clear. I am not here to shame small businesses for using email as their primary tool. When you're a team of 3 or 4 people, email often works. Here's why. When you have a tiny team, everyone knows everything. There's no information asymmetry. When Sarah gets an email about a client problem, she knows the client, she knows the history, she knows who to loop in because that person sits next to her. The context that email fails to capture doesn't matter when the context lives in everyone's head simultaneously. The overhead of a proper project management system, setting it up, training people, managing it, maintaining it, might genuinely exceed the inefficiency it solves. For a 3-person company, Trello might be overkill. Similarly, the chaos that comes when people join and leave, one of email's fatal structural flaws, doesn't happen often enough at that scale to matter. The danger is not using email when you're small. The danger is refusing to evolve when you grow. Companies keep running on email long after they've grown past the point where email works. Not because email is still the right tool, but because nobody stopped to ask whether it still was. Part 3. Jennifer's story, how email dysfunction happens. Let me tell you a story about how email dysfunction happens in an organization. It's gradual, invisible, insidious. And by the time you notice it, you're already deep in. Meet Jennifer, a project manager at a mid-sized consulting firm. When she started 5 years ago, her role was clear: coordinate projects, track deliverables, communicate with clients and team members. Email was one of her tools, a useful one. She'd send updates. The proposal is ready for review. She'd get responses. Looks good, approved to send. Clean, simple, functional. But over time, things change. A client asked a question about a previous project. Jennifer dug through her email for 20 minutes to find the answer. It was buried in a thread from 8 months ago. She found it, sent the response, moved on. Just part of the job, she thought. A team member asked, "What's the status of the Peterson project?" Jennifer wrote a 3-paragraph email summarizing the status, the blockers, the next steps. 2 weeks later, someone else asked the same question. She copied and pasted the same email, updated the dates. A vendor needed information. Jennifer had it in her email somewhere. She searched for 15 minutes, found it, forwarded it. Someone asked for a document. "I know I have it. It was an attachment from March, I think." 10 minutes searching through old attachments. Found it, sent it. Each individual instance seemed fine, just part of the job, but the pattern was forming. Email was becoming her primary tool for storing information, tracking status, answering questions, and finding documents. She was building a personal database out of a message delivery system. Fast forward to 5 years later. Jennifer now manages 12 active projects. Her inbox has 8,472 messages. She receives 150 plus emails per day. She spends 15 to 20 hours per week just managing email. Her typical day, the first hour is inbox triage, responding to urgent requests, flagging things that need follow-up, trying to decide what she can safely ignore. Throughout the day, she's interrupted every 10 to 15 minutes by incoming emails. The last hour of the day is catch-up on everything she missed during meetings. Then in the evening, the quick check that turns into 45 minutes. She cannot easily answer the question, "What did we decide about the budget on Project X?" because the decision lives inside a 23-message thread from 6 weeks ago, mixed with tangential discussion about 3 other topics. She loses track of action items because they're buried in threads. When she goes on vacation, she comes back to 600-plus emails and spends 3 days catching up. Some things fell through the cracks while she was gone because they lived only in email threads that nobody else could see. She is exhausted, overwhelmed, and she feels constantly behind, even though she's working 50-plus hours a week. This is email dysfunction. And here is the part that makes it truly insidious. Jennifer's colleagues are having the exact same experience. Everyone is drowning in email. So when they need information from Jennifer, they email her because they don't know where else to look. And when Jennifer needs information from them, she emails them for the same reason. The dysfunction is self-reinforcing. Email creates more email. The more information lives in email, the more you have to use email to find information, which generates more email, which creates more places for information to hide, which means more searching, which means more follow-up threads. It's a vicious cycle. And most organizations are stuck in it right now. If you've made it this far, you're probably getting benefit from what I have to share. You might even be thinking about sharing this with colleagues or having a conversation with your team. If you're feeling generous and would like to give back to support me in my efforts, you can do so at buymeacoffee.com/automateoffice. Donations can be one-time or recurring in any amount that you would like, and show me that you appreciate the content I provide. Part 4, the problems, a complete diagnosis. Now we go deep. I want to go through every structural failure of email as a business tool, not as a list of minor annoyances, but as the systemic dysfunctions they actually are. These problems cost organizations billions of dollars in lost productivity, missed opportunities, and employee burnout. Get a notebook. You're going to want to check these off. Problem 1, email is not a database, but everyone treats it like one. This is the foundational problem from which almost everything else flows, and I want to be precise about it because it's technical enough that people sometimes gloss over it without really feeling the impact. In a proper database, data has a schema. Fields have types. Relationships between records are explicit and defined. You can query it. Show me all support tickets opened in the last 30 days. Show me all invoices over 5,000 euros that are unpaid. Show me all open requests assigned to the marketing team. The database answers immediately. Now, let's look at what email gives you instead. No structure. In email, everything is unstructured text. A customer's email address might be in the body of the message, or in the signature, or in a previous reply in the thread, or in a forwarded attachment from three levels deep. There's no customer email address field. There's no schema. There's just text. No querying. You cannot ask your inbox, show me all projects with a budget over 50,000 euros closing in Q3. You can keyword search, but search is not a query. Search gives you a pile of potentially related emails that you still have to manually read and interpret. And search fails when the concept you're looking for was phrased differently across different emails. No deduplication. You email me a client's email address. I forward it to my colleague. They forward it to someone else. Now, four people have four copies of the same information in four separate inboxes. If the address changes, which copy is current? Nobody knows. No version control. You email me version 1 of a document as an attachment. I make edits and email you version 2. You make different edits to your copy of version 1 and email me your version 2. Now there are two conflicting version 2s, and we have to manually reconcile them. This happens constantly. It's why email attachments with names like final, V3, revised, actual final, .docx exist. No validation. Anyone can type anything into an email. There's no enforcement of this field must be a valid email address or this field must contain a date. Garbage data arrives alongside good data with no way to distinguish them. Let me make this concrete. Imagine we're working with a sales team that tracked their entire pipeline by email. When a lead came in, someone emailed the team, "New lead, Acme Corporation. Contact is John Smith, interested in the enterprise package." Then there were follow-up emails across weeks and months. Speaking with John, setting the proposal, scheduling the demo. The demo went well. The CFO needs to be involved. They're going with a competitor. All of this scattered across dozens of emails over several months. No one could easily answer how many active leads do we have, because you'd have to manually read hundreds of emails to find out. No one could answer what's the status of the Acme deal without reading the entire thread. When the salesperson went on vacation, nobody else could pick up their deals because all the context was locked in that person's inbox. When it was time for quarterly forecasting, it took days to manually reconstruct the pipeline from email. They needed a CRM, a customer relationship management system, a database designed specifically for tracking sales leads and opportunities. In a proper CRM, each lead is a record with structured fields, company, contact name, status, deal value, expected close date, next action. You can query, show me all leads in proposal sent status with close dates this month. You can generate pipeline reports in seconds. When someone goes on vacation, their colleagues can see exactly where every deal stands. But they used email because email was easy and everyone already uses it. And we don't need to learn a new tool. And it cost them in lost deals, in wasted time, in stress and frustration. This pattern repeats across every business function. Customer support using email threads instead of a ticketing system. Project management using email chains instead of proper project tools. Knowledge management using forwarded emails instead of a wiki. HR records in email instead of an HR system. Inventory tracked by email updates instead of an inventory tool. The rule is simple. If you're storing data, get it out of email and into a purpose-built system. Problem 2. Email makes it trivially easy to create work for others. This problem is as much psychological as technical, and it has a name, the asymmetry problem. Email is asymmetric. It takes 5 seconds to send an email that creates 5 hours of work for the recipient. And because there's no friction, no form, no required fields, just an open text box and a send button, people fire off requests with none of the context the recipient needs to act on them. Three examples. The quick question. Subject line. Quick question. Body. Hey, can you send me the sales numbers of the Northeast region broken down by product category for Q1, Q2, and Q3? Thanks. Time for the sender to write this. 30 seconds. Time for the recipient to fulfill this, pull data from three different systems, cross-reference to ensure categories are consistent, format it into a spreadsheet, write a covering email, attach the file, send. 2 hours. And the recipient received this request with zero context about why it's needed, what level of detail is expected, or when it's due. The vague directive. The client had some concerns about the proposal. Can you take a look and revise? Let me know when it's ready. What concerns? Which part of the proposal? What specifically needs to change? What is the deadline? What client? The main contact or someone new? The sender typed this in 20 seconds. The recipient now has to email back asking for clarification, wait for a response, reread the proposal, guess at the concerns, make changes, hope they address the right things, and send it back for review. What should have been a 15-minute revision becomes a 3-day back and forth. The mass information request. Hi team, we're doing strategic planning for next year. Can everyone send me their thoughts on priorities, resource needs, and growth opportunities for your area? Sent to 20 people. Time for the center? 2 minutes. Collective time created for the 20 recipients? 20 to 40 hours of work, because not only does everyone have to respond, but they respond in 20 completely different formats, and now the sender has to manually synthesize it all. The root cause is not malice. It's the absence of friction. Email requires zero effort from the sender to create unlimited work for the recipient. In a well-designed process, this asymmetry doesn't exist. A form forces the requester to provide the structured information the processor needs. The form is the friction that protects both parties. The solution? Use forms for structured data collection. Use templates for common requests. Estimate the work you're creating before sending. Provide all necessary context. And before asking someone to find information, spend 5 minutes looking for it yourself. Problem 3. Email is a terrible task management system. How many of you are using your inbox as your to-do list right now? You flag emails to remember to act on them. You leave things unread as a reminder. You have a mental map of emails that need action scattered across your inbox. This is extremely common, and it's a disaster. Here's why. No prioritization. All emails look the same regardless of importance. The urgent and critical sits next to the trivial and irrelevant. You cannot easily sort by actual priority, only by sender, date, or subject line. No due dates. Email has timestamps for when it was sent. It has zero concept of when the resulting task needs to be completed. You cannot see tasks due today. You cannot see tasks overdue. No delegation or assignment. If a task needs to be done by someone else, you forward the email and hope. There is no formal assignment, no confirmation, no tracking of ownership, no progress tracking. A task in your inbox is either not done, the email is still there, or done, the email is archived. There is no in progress, no waiting for input from another party, no blocked. Tasks get buried. New emails constantly push older emails down the page. Something important from yesterday is now on page 3 today, and you've forgotten about it. I've seen people with inboxes containing 3,000 plus messages because they're genuinely afraid that if they archive anything, they'll forget to do it. This is not a personal failing. It's a rational response to using the wrong tool. The solution is simple to state. Use an actual task management tool. Todoist, Microsoft To-Do, Asana, ClickUp, Notion, whatever fits your team. When an email creates a task, create the task in your task manager with all the necessary context, then archive the email. The email is the notification. It is not the task itself. Your inbox should be a temporary processing queue, not a permanent home. Problem 4. Email threads are where context goes to die. Picture an email thread with 47 replies spanning 12 days involving 8 people. The original question was simple. What's the budget for the marketing campaign? But then someone replied, asking which campaign. Someone else replied with a budget number. Someone questioned whether that number included agency fees. Someone forwarded an old email with conflicting numbers. Someone raised a separate but related question about the social media budget. The conversation split into two topics that are now tangled together. People started replying to earlier messages in the thread rather than the most recent one. Someone replied all with, "Thanks," contributing nothing. By message 47, the conversation has completely lost coherence. The original question still hasn't been definitively answered. A critical piece of information is buried in message 23. A decision was apparently made in message 31, but then contradicted in message 38. This is thread chaos, and it happens because email threads are a terrible structure for complex discussions. Linear structure, non-linear conversations. Email threads are strictly sequential, one message after another. But real conversations branch. Topic A spawns subtopic B, which leads to tangent C, while the original topic A continues in parallel. Email cannot handle this branching. Everything collapses into one chaotic sequence. No resolution state. In a proper discussion system, you can mark a discussion as resolved or pin the final decision prominently. In email, the thread just ends. Did we reach a decision? You have to read all 47 messages to find out. No synthesis. After 47 messages, someone needs to say, "Here's what we decided." That synthesis goes into message 48. But a new person joining the thread won't see it prominently. They see message 1. And in 6 months, when you need to recall the decision, you read all 48 messages to find the summary. The reply all trap. Not everyone needs to see every reply. But email doesn't offer granular controls. It's either reply and risk leaving out someone who needs to see it, or reply all and spam everyone. Most people default to reply all to be safe, which creates noise for everyone. The rule. If an email thread has gone past 5 or 6 messages without reaching resolution, the conversation needs to move to a different medium. Either reschedule a meeting to resolve it synchronously, or move it to a collaboration tool designed for structured discussion. Problem 5. Email has no access control. Let me describe a scenario that should make you genuinely uncomfortable. You email a colleague a sensitive document, a draft strategic plan. It says, marked confidential in the subject line. You trust them to handle it appropriately. The moment you hit send, you've lost all control over the document. Your colleague can forward it to anyone, anywhere, at any time. They can print it, screenshot it, save it to a USB drive, upload it to a personal cloud account, or accidentally hit reply all with it attached. There's nothing you can do to prevent any of this. Compare this to sharing a document through a properly configured document management system. You can grant view-only access. They can read, but not download. You can set an expiration date. Access revokes automatically on a given date. You can track who viewed it and when. You can revoke access remotely if needed. You can see a complete audit trail. Email gives you none of this. The consequences are significant. Information leaks to people who shouldn't have it, either maliciously or accidentally. Industries with regulatory requirements, healthcare, finance, legal, find it nearly impossible to enforce data governance policies in email. Version confusion reigns when outdated attachments continue circulating after a file has been updated. The fix. Never send sensitive information as an email attachment when you care about controlling who sees it. Share a link to a controlled location instead. You maintain the original. You maintain access control. You can update it, and every link holder sees the updated version automatically. Problem 6. CC and BCC culture is destroying productivity and trust. Let's be honest about what CC has become in modern office culture. CC was originally meant to keep someone in the loop on a conversation they don't need to actively participate in. What it has become, "I'm documenting that I told you so I can't be blamed later," or "I want management to see this exchange," or "I have no idea who actually needs this information, so I'm including everyone." I've seen email threads where 15 people are CC'd and only 2 people are actually involved in the conversation. The other 13 receive every message. They each have to open it, read at least the subject line and first sentence, decide whether it requires their attention, and then close it. At 90 seconds per email per person, a 10-message thread with 15 CC'd observers costs the organization 22 hours of productivity for one conversation. BCC, blind carbon copy, is even more troubling. In the vast majority of business uses, BCC is deceptive. You are secretly showing this conversation to someone the other party doesn't know is watching. If you regularly BCC people in business conversations, ask yourself honestly, why does this need to be done secretly? The answer is almost always that you're either building a case against someone or you're working around a broken process rather than fixing it. Here's the harder truth. CC culture is a symptom of organizational dysfunction that email didn't create, but absolutely amplifies. People CC their boss on everything because they don't trust that they won't be blamed. People CC broadly because they don't trust that the right people will otherwise be informed. These are trust and accountability problems. Email is just the venue where they play out. The fix. Default to not CCing anyone. Only CC someone if they specifically ask to be kept in the loop or have a documented need to be informed. Better yet, move updates about projects and processes to a shared tool where everyone with access can see what's happening without being emailed about it. Problem 7. Email is where knowledge goes to die. Pop quiz. 3 months ago, someone sent you an email explaining how to configure the reporting system. You need that information again today. How long does it take you to find it? If you're like most people, 10 to 20 minutes of searching, trying different keyword combinations, scrolling through results, clicking into emails that turn out to be wrong, and finally finding it buried in a thread about something else entirely. Now imagine that information was in a searchable knowledge base. You navigate to reporting system, configuration guide. 5 seconds, done. Email is where the knowledge goes to die. Here's why. Information is hidden in personal inboxes. If you email someone a process document, the information now exists in their inbox and your sent folder. If a third person needs that information, they either have to ask one of you, generating another email, or they'll never find it. Search requires remembering keywords. If the email you need mentions quarterly reporting, but you search for Q4 reports, you may not find it. The same concept phrased differently across different emails becomes unfindable. Information becomes outdated silently. The configuration guide from 8 months ago, the system has been updated twice since then. The email still has the old instructions. The reader follows the old instructions and things break. Nobody knows the email is outdated. There's no version history. This article was last updated notice. Duplication and inconsistency. 5 people have each explained the same process to 5 different colleagues in 5 different emails. Now there are 5 slightly different versions of how to do X floating around. Which one is correct? Nobody knows. The rule. If you find yourself explaining the same thing more than twice, document it somewhere permanent, findable, and maintained. A wiki, a knowledge base, a shared document with a permanent link. Not re-explained via email to each new person who asks. Problem 8. When people leave, they take your data with them. This is the one that should keep managers up at night, and it is directly related to the knowledge burial problem. But the consequences are acute enough that it deserves its own section. When an employee leaves and their email account is deactivated, what happens to all the information in that account? In most organizations, it's gone. Or it's technically archived, somewhere nobody knows how to access. Or it's forwarded to their replacement, a fire hose of undifferentiated email history that the new person cannot possibly process. Every piece of knowledge carried in email threads and never captured in a proper system disappears with that person. A sales representative leaves. Their replacement has no history with the key accounts because that history lives in deactivated email threads. A long-standing client calls, mentions something discussed 6 months ago, and the new rep has no idea what they're talking about. The relationship is damaged. An IT technician quits. All the open support requests they were handling, every vendor relationship managed through personal email exchanges, it all vanishes. The new person starts from scratch. Some portion of those open requests never get resolved because nobody knows they existed. Here's the truly insidious aspect. The information in those emails was never properly captured in the first place. If someone had been using a ticketing system, a CRM, or a project management tool, all that knowledge would survive the departure of any individual. The institutional memory would outlast any single employee. Email as a process tool doesn't just fail in the moment. It creates a time bomb. Every key departure detonates a piece of your organization's memory. Problem 9, the who do I email problem. Think about the last time you joined a new job or joined a new project or needed help with an unfamiliar process. What did you do? You asked someone, who do I contact about this? And they either told you or they didn't know either. And if they didn't know, you guessed. You sent an email to the person who seemed most likely. And either they helped you or they forwarded you to someone else. This is broken. Completely and structurally broken. When a process requires you to know a specific person's name and email address in order to initiate it, that process has zero fault tolerance. What happens when that person's out sick? What happens when they change roles? What happens when a new employee doesn't know the social map of the organization yet? Think about how Amazon handles return. You go to your orders. You find the item. There's a button right there. Return or replace items. You click it. A form appears. It already knows what you ordered, when you ordered it, and your address. It asks a few structured questions. What's wrong? What resolution do you want? You fill it in. You get a return label. You never email anyone. You never need to know a single person's name. The process works regardless of which Amazon employee is working that day because it doesn't depend on any individual employee. That is what business process design looks like and when it's done properly. Now imagine you had to email Amazon to return something. You'd have to write, Dear Amazon, I purchased a pair of headphones on a certain date, order number unknown, and one ear is not working. I would like a return, please advise, and then wait for someone to email back and hope they have the right information. And maybe they'll ask for the order number, and you'll have found it. And maybe they'll CC someone else. Nobody would buy from Amazon. It would be a disaster. And yet that is exactly how most internal business processes work. The solution is not teaching new employees the social map. The solution is building processes that don't require anyone to know the social map. Intake forms, ticketing systems, self-service portals. The information goes in through a form. It routes automatically to the right team. The person submitting it never needs to know who handles it. Problem 10, approvals by email, the black hole. Purchase approvals by email are one of the most common and most painful manifestations of email dysfunction. Let me walk through what this looks like. Someone needs approval for a 3,000 euro equipment purchase. They email their manager. The manager is in back-to-back meetings all day. The email sits. Next day, the manager replies, approved in principle, but check with finance. The email is forwarded to finance with a brief note. Finance replies to the manager, not the original requester. The manager forgets to forward it. 3 days pass. The original person follows up. More emails. Finance eventually approves. Now try to audit this. The approval is scattered across 4 different inboxes in 3 different email threads, some with subject lines that changed partway through. There's no record that makes sense. There's no way to know how long this took. There's no way to report on average approval time. Now do this same flow in a proper approval tool. The request is submitted with all required data. It routes to the original, to the manager automatically. The manager approves with one click. No email to write, no forwarding required. It routes to finance automatically. Finance approves. The requester is notified. The entire history, who approved, when, with what comments, lives in one place permanently. The approval that took a week of email chains now takes hours, and it leaves a clean, auditable trail. Problem 11. Status update emails. The most expensive waste in business. If there is one email pattern I would eliminate from the face of the earth, it's the status update email. Just checking in on where we are with the project. Can you give me a quick update on the deliverable? Hi team, a quick status update. These emails exist for one reason and one reason only. The status of the thing isn't visible anywhere. If it were visible in a project management tool, on a shared dashboard, in a tracking system, nobody would need to ask. They would just go look. The status update email is the tax you pay for not having proper visibility into your work. And it's an enormous tax. For a project with 5 stakeholders, each sending 1 status check per week, each requiring a response from the project lead, you're generating 10 emails per week just to maintain awareness of a single project's status. Multiply it by every project running in the organization. Multiply by every stakeholder. In a properly configured project management tool, the status is just there, updated by the people doing the work as a natural part of doing the work. No request needed, no reply needed, no email required. Visible always to everyone with access. Status updates are not the information itself. Status updates are what happens when the information has no proper home. Problem 12, the language of email passive aggression. Email has spawned an entire vocabulary of workplace passive aggression. These phrases are so ubiquitous that many people use them without realizing how they land. Let me go through the complete hall of shame. Per my previous email, translation, I already told you this. You didn't read it. I'm documenting that fact. This phrase is weaponized documentation. It signals that the relationship has deteriorated to the point where people are building evidence files against each other. If you find yourself writing per my previous email, the right move is to pick up the phone. Going forward. Translation, you have been doing this wrong and I am formally correcting you in writing. It is a reprimand wrapped in the language of the future, and it almost always reads as condescending regardless of intent. If a process needs to change, have a conversation. Don't put going forward in an email. As discussed, sometimes entirely legitimate, confirming a shared understanding in writing. More often used as I'm creating a paper trail of the commitment you made verbally so you can't back out of it. When used as a gotcha, it signals that trust between parties has broken down. Trust cannot be repaired by email. Please advise. This phrase sounds polite, but typically means I'm stuck and it's your fault and I need you to fix it. It rarely comes with enough information for the recipient to actually help. Replace it with a specific direct task. Not sure if you saw my last email. You know they saw it. This is a follow-up pretending to be polite while communicating irritation. Try instead following up on specific topic. Is there anything blocking this? Hope this helps. Tacked onto the end of a correction or a barely helpful response. This phrase does not actually convey hope. Everyone knows it. The deeper point. These phrases don't exist because people are rude. They exist because email removes tone, removes relationship, and removes the real-time feedback loops that allow human beings to course-correct in conversation. Misunderstandings and resentments that would dissolve in a 30-second phone call calcify into passive-aggressive email culture over months and years. The fix is not teaching people to write nicer emails. The fix is moving complex, emotionally loaded conversations out of email entirely and into media that can actually handle them.
We talk a lot on this show about how technology should serve humans, not replace them. That's why I'm so excited to share that I've partnered with Aira. Aira, A-I-R-A, is an AI-powered customer communication tool that actually aligns with the values we discuss here at Automate Office Work. And here's the best part. Aira doesn't write your emails for you. It doesn't hunt down cold leads to spam people. Instead, it focuses on the most valuable asset you already have. Your existing relationships. It removes the drudgery of tracking so you can focus on the joy of connecting. I saw the need for this in my own life. I don't need thousands of new contacts. I need to stay close to the thousands of amazing people I already know. I used to run a complex manual system tracking when I last spoke to a partner and setting alerts for when to reach out again. It was a commitment to make sure my relationships didn't just fade away into the noise. Aira takes that intention and gives it superpowers. It connects to your contacts and sends you reports when their companies show up in the news. It gives you the signal, the important life events and business updates, so when you do reach out, you're genuinely informed about what matters to them. It's available now in 14 countries across Europe for €149 a month. It's AI done right, handling the admin so you can be more human. If you want to support this show and strengthen your own network, head to get.aira.app/automate. Using that link helps support my work here. and I truly believe it will help you lead a more intentional, connected, professional life. Now let's get back to the show.
Part 5, the AI trap. Why automating email is not the answer. We need to address the hottest topic in business technology right now, AI for email. And I'm going to be very direct because there's a lot of money being spent in the wrong direction. The pitch goes like this. You have too many emails and AI can help. It can read them all for you. It can summarize long threads. It can draft replies. It can automatically send emails based on triggers. It can extract information from incoming messages and route it to the right places. And to be precise, some of this is technically useful. AI that summarizes a long thread so you can catch up quickly is genuinely helpful. AI that drafts a reply so you can approve and send instead of typing from scratch saves real time. These things have value. I'm not dismissing them entirely. But let me describe where this is heading and why it's not the answer to the core problem. Here is what happens when you apply AI to email at scale on both sides of the exchange. On the sending side, AI can generate emails, personalized, grammatically perfect, in the right tone, at massive scale. If you have 500 customers and want to send each a customized follow-up, AI can do that in seconds. On the receiving side, the customer's AI assistant reads the email and generates a reply. Your AI reads the reply and generates a follow-up. Their AI reads the follow-up. We are heading toward a world where AI is writing emails to AI. Millions of messages per day between business systems carrying data that used to require a human to type and a human to read, and now requiring no human in the loop at all. This is not a solution. This is an escalation. This is an arms race. And the loser of the arms race is every human being who still opens their inbox each morning and finds it is not just full of emails from other humans, but stuffed with AI-generated messages, automated responses, and AI-to-AI communication that somehow still ends up in their inbox requiring human triage. Here is the analogy I want to carry with you. Your bathtub is overflowing because you left the faucet running. AI email tools are giving you a faster bucket to bail water out of the tub. That's actually helpful. You're bailing more efficiently, but you are still not turning off the faucet. The faucet is using email for data storage, project management, task tracking, knowledge management, and complex collaboration. All things email is structurally unsuited for. Turning off the faucet means moving those functions to purpose-built systems so that email volume naturally decreases. When email is used only for what it's actually good at, brief asynchronous messages, notifications, and simple external coordination, you don't need AI to manage it. It takes 20 minutes a day instead of 3 hours. Let me say this plainly. We can all tell when an email was written by AI. The grammar is perfect. The fluency is there. And it reads like nothing. It has all the words and none of the meaning. It is optimized for not being wrong rather than for being genuinely useful. And when you receive 50 of them a day, your brain learns to skip them, which means the information in them, even when it matters, gets missed. AI-written emails are training entire workforces to ignore email more aggressively than they already do. The answer to too many bad emails is not faster emails. The answer is not better written emails. The answer is not emails that understand their own context. The answer is not sending the email in the first place, because the data should be going somewhere structured, not into a message. Let's return to the Amazon example. Every field in that return form is structured data. It goes into Amazon's system as a ticket with defined fields, order ID, item, issue type, resolution requested, customer account. It is routable. It is reportable. It has an SLA. The customer success team can filter it, sort it, and process it systematically. Contrast this with a customer service email inbox. Emails arrive in free text. Someone has to read each one, decide what it's about, figure out what information is present and what's missing, route it to the right person or team, and manually create whatever tracking exists. It is orders of magnitude less efficient. And the data, the actual information about what problems customers are having, is locked inside prose rather than living as structured, queryable records. AI that reads those emails and extracts the data is doing the right job, Move in data from email into structured systems. But the more efficient solution is to never let the data go through email in the first place. Build the intake form. Capture structured data at the source. Eliminate the translation step entirely. Part 6. The better way. Proper systems and intake forms. Here's the principle that should guide every process improvement you make in your organization. Meet users exactly where they are, with exactly the context they need. Amazon's report a problem button lives next to the order it pertains to, not somewhere on a separate support page where you have to find it and then re-enter your order details. Right there, next to the thing, because that's where you are when you realize there's a problem. This is what excellent process design looks like. The intake mechanism lives in the context where the need arises. Your employees and customers don't need to know who handles something, what their email address is, what information to include. They just need to find the form that is right there in context, ready to accept their structured input. A well-designed intake form does 6 things that email cannot. It enforces completeness. Required fields mean the request cannot be submitted without the information needed to process it. No more follow-up emails asking which printer or what dates. It structures the data. Drop-down menus, date pickers, checkboxes. These create structured records that can be filtered, sorted, reported on, and routed automatically. Priority, high, medium, low, is infinitely more useful in a system than this is kind of urgent, I think. Buried in paragraph 3. It creates a record automatically. The moment the form is submitted, a ticket exists. It has a number. It has a timestamp. It has a status field. Nobody has to do anything to create this record. The submission creates the record. It routes it automatically. A form that asks, what type of request is this, can automatically send IT requests to IT, HR requests to HR, finance requests to finance. No human router needed. No, I'm looping in the right person. It sets expectations. Forms can display SLAs at the point of submission. You'll hear back within 2 business days. This alone eliminates a massive category of follow-up emails. It provides visibility. Both the requester and the processor can see the status of the request at any time. No need to email asking where things stand. Let me go through specific concrete examples. Every one of these is currently running by email in most organizations. Every one is straightforwardly better as a form connected to a proper system. IT support requests. Help desk tickets. This is the most obvious one, and many companies have already made this move. If yours hasn't, this is your first project. Tools. Jira Service Management, Freshdesk, Zendesk, or even a simple intake form connected to a spreadsheet for very small teams. HR requests, leave requests, expense claims, change of personal details, onboarding checklists. All of these have structured data requirements and approval workflows. None of them belongs in an email. Modern HR systems, Bamboo HR, Personio, Workday, have self-service portals for all of these. Purchase approvals. A purchase request form with required fields, vendor, amount, project code, justification, budget owner, routes to the right approver automatically. 2 clicks to approve. The complete audit trail exists without anyone writing a word. New client onboarding. Instead of emailing a new client asking them to send their logo, their colors, their billing details, their contact list, send them a branded onboarding form. 1 link. All the fields they need to fill in. The data goes straight into your CRM. The client sees a professional, organized process. You get structured data rather than unformatted emails. Internal knowledge requests. Who do I talk to about X should not be an email. It should be a searchable internal knowledge base, a Notion page, a Confluence space, a SharePoint wiki, where the answer already exists and anyone can find it under a minute. Project status updates, not an email. A dashboard in your project management tool, visible to anyone with access, updated by the people doing the work as a natural part of their workflow. No request needed, no response needed. Customer complaints. Not an email to a generic address, a form on your website next to the thing the complaint pertains to. Pre-populated with available customer data, routed to the right team, tracked through to resolution, like Amazon. Meeting requests. Not an email chain trying to find a mutual slot. A Calendly link a Microsoft bookings page, a shared calendar with your availability visible. One click to book. The era of "are you free sometime next week?" email chains is over. The point is not that you need to buy every tool on this list. The point is that for every category of work you currently run through email, a purpose-built tool exists that does it faster, better, more reliably, with less frustration and more measurable outcomes. Your job, as someone who cares about how work gets done, is to find the right matches for your organization's size, budget, and complexity. One more thing about tools. Email should primarily be a notification layer, pointing to where work actually happens. The ideal email looks like this. A new task has been assigned to you in Asana. Link. Or your approval is needed for purchase request number 1247. Link. The email alerts you that something needs attention. The actual work happens in the appropriate tool. The email doesn't contain the information. It points you to where the information lives permanently. Email as ephemeral notification, not permanent storage. That is the model. Part 7, the process maturity framework. Now, I want to give you a framework for thinking about where your organization is and where it needs to go. I've defined 5 maturity levels. Most organizations I encounter are between level 1 and level 2. Level 3 is achievable for most within a year of focused effort. Levels 4 and 5 are where truly operationally excellent organizations live. Level 1, the email inbox as operating system. At level 1, email is everything. The inbox is the task list, the archive, the communication hub, the approval system, the project tracker, and the knowledge base, all of it, simultaneously. Signs that you're at level 1. Your primary way of knowing what to work on today is reading your email. Important project history lives in individual inboxes, not in any shared system. Approvals happen through email threads. You have no ticketing system for IT, HR, or other support requests. When someone leaves the company, you scramble to access their email. You regularly ask colleagues, "Did you get my email?" At level 1, the organization runs. Things do get done, but it is grinding. It is fragile. It depends entirely on individual memory and individual inbox discipline. And it doesn't scale. Level 2, islands of tools, sea of email. At level 2, some tools have been adopted, but they haven't replaced email. They've been added alongside it. The engineering team uses Jira. The sales team has a CRM. There's a Slack workspace, but there's no organization-wide clarity about which tool is used for what. Different teams have different systems that don't integrate. Cross-team work defaults to email because there's no agreed cross-team system. People confirm in email after decisions are made in other tools, doubling the work. You receive Slack notifications and email notifications about the same thing. Level 2 is often more stressful than level 1 because the noise is higher. You're managing more channels, and because nothing is authoritative, you can't fully trust any of the tools, so you use all of them, plus email, just to be safe. Level 3, defined channels, structured intake. Level 3 is the first major breakthrough. At level 3, the organization has made explicit decisions about what goes where. There's a written policy, or at a minimum, a shared understanding that urgent, time-sensitive internal communication goes on Slack or Teams. Project tasks and status live in the project management tool. Support requests go through the ticketing system with an intake form. Approvals go through the designated approval workflow. External communication uses email. Knowledge and documentation live in the wiki. The intake form exists. IT requests have a form. HR requests have a form. The standard processes that used to create email chaos now have structured homes. Signs you're at level 3. New employees can find where to make a request without asking anyone for an email address. Management can see the status of work across teams without requesting status update emails. When someone leaves, the replacement can find project history. Your inbox is mostly external mail, not internal process noise. Getting from level 2 to level 3 requires a specific, intentional effort, auditing your most common email processes and replacing them with proper tools. It does not have to happen all at once. Identify your highest volume, most painful email process and fix that one first, then the next. Level 4, data-driven, measurable, continuously improving. At level 4, the organization doesn't just have proper tools. It measures the processes running through them and uses that data to improve. IT knows their average ticket resolution time, which issues types take the longest, and peak request volumes. HR knows where new hires get stuck in onboarding. Customer success knows their open case backlog, resolution times, and satisfaction scores at a granular level. None of this data exists if your processes run through email. You cannot measure what lives in inboxes. You can only measure what lives in systems. Level 4 is where the investment in proper tooling starts paying compounding dividends. Level 5, proactive, automated, and self-learning. Level 5 is where processes don't just run well. They anticipate and respond automatically to patterns. The system detects that a specific type of IT ticket spikes every time a new software version is deployed and automatically surfaces the relevant knowledge base article to those tickets. The CRM detects that customers who haven't logged in for 30 days are at churn risk and routes them to a customer success manager. The HR system automatically triggers the full onboarding checklist the moment a hire date is confirmed, assigning tasks to IT, facilities, and the hiring manager without anyone sending a single email. At level 5, the routine is automated and humans deal with the genuinely exceptional. This is where AI is legitimately and powerfully useful, not reading and writing emails, but triggering the right automated actions at the right moments within properly structured systems. Most organizations don't need to aim for level 5 immediately. Understand what it looks like, so you aim in the right direction as you move through levels 3 and 4. On Automate Office Work, we talk a lot about a hard truth. You cannot solve a problem you haven't actually defined. Too many people run out and buy shiny new software or a trendy AI tool before they even know what's broken. They're just treating surface-level symptoms. But when you deeply understand your root problem, you automatically define what success looks like. And the right solution practically chooses itself. There is so much nuance to this that we just can't fit it all into a weekly podcast. That's why I built an online learning platform, Automate Office Work Academy, and created the course, Start with the Problem. This is a comprehensive 10-hour masterclass designed to turn you into a master problem solver. We skip the generic AI hype and dive into what actually matters, the art of observation, root cause analysis, hypothesis testing, and stakeholder perspectives. Plus, you'll complete a capstone project where you apply these frameworks directly to a real problem in your current job. Right now, I'm looking for a select group of founding students. The course is completely free for the first 100 people who sign up. All I ask in return is your honest feedback so I can make it even better. Don't just chase solutions. Learn how to diagnose the problem. Go to automateofficework.com/academy right now to claim your free spot before they're gone. That's automateofficework.com/academy. And now let's get back to the show. Part 8, the DRAIN framework, auditing your email processes. Now I want to give you something you can bring to your team this week, a concrete framework for auditing your current email-based processes and deciding what to do about them. I call this the DRAIN framework, D-R-A-I-N, because if you do it right, you will drain the inbox over time. D stands for define your email categories. Start by classifying what is actually in your inbox. Take a week's worth of sent and received emails and put every single one into a category. The categories: 1, external communication, emails with people outside your organization. 2, status requests, asking or answering, where are we on X? 3, task assignments, assigning or accepting work items. 4, approvals, requesting or granting permission for something. 5, information transfer, sharing data, reports, or documents. 6, coordination, scheduling, logistics, meeting related. 7, social and cultural, team check-ins, recognition, casual exchanges. 8, escalations and complaints, internal issues being escalated up or sideways. 9, system notifications, emails generated automatically by other tools. 10, process requests, requests to IT, HR, finance, facilities. Do this as a team. Have everyone independently categorize their email for 1 week, then compare. The categories consuming the most time collectively are your highest priority improvement targets. R stands for rate the damage. For each email category, rate it on two dimensions. Volume. How many emails per week fall here? High, medium, low. For dysfunction. How often does this category lead to miscommunication, delays, missing information, or frustration? High, medium, low. Plot them on a 2x2 matrix. High volume and high dysfunction. Fix this first. High volume and low dysfunction. Monitor, but don't overinvest. Low volume and high dysfunction. Worth fixing for morale and risk reduction. Low volume and low dysfunction. Leave it alone for now. This matrix tells you where to invest your energy. Not all email problems are equally expensive. A stands for audit the root cause. Why does this happen by email? Is it because there's no better tool? Because people don't know about the tool that exists? Because the tool exists but doesn't fit their workflow? Because the process was designed before modern tools and nobody reviewed it? Who sends and receives? Internal, external, or both? Internal processes are much easier to fix. You control both sides of the exchange. External processes require partners or customers to change behavior, which is harder and requires more lead time. What information is typically exchanged? List the data fields that appear in these emails. This becomes the field list for your future intake form. What happens after the email is received? Is the information just read and filed? Does it trigger an action? Does it need to be tracked through a life cycle? Does it need to route to someone else? The answer tells you what category of system you need. What goes wrong most often? Missing information, delays, lost threads, unknown status, unclear ownership. These are your requirements for the replacement system. I stands for identify the right tool. Based on your audit, identify what category of tool would replace this email flow. You don't need to pick the specific vendor yet, just the category. Does this process need a ticketing system, a project management tool, an approval workflow, a CRM, a form connected to a spreadsheet, a knowledge base, a scheduling tool? Be honest about your organization's scale and maturity. A 10-person company does not need Salesforce. A 500-person company should not be managing customer relationships in a Google Sheet. Match the complexity and cost of the tool to the actual scale and sophistication of the need. N stands for navigate the change. This is the step most process improvement efforts skip, and it's why most of them fail. Technical tools are easy to implement. Culture change is hard. If you announced, we're no longer using email for IT requests, use the new ticketing system, and that is the entire change management effort, most people will drift back to email within 2 weeks. Successful adoption requires 5 things. A clear date and a hard commitment. Starting the first of next month, all IT requests will go through the ticketing system. No exceptions. Vagueness kills adoption. We're going to try to kills adoption. A date and a commitment do not. Onboarding that takes under 5 minutes. If it takes an hour to learn the new tool, adoption will be slow and resentful. Design the onboarding so that a complete novice can successfully submit their first request in under 5 minutes. If they cannot, the onboarding is broken, not the person. 3, visible leadership. When the CEO submits a support ticket through the proper channel instead of emailing IT directly, it signals to the entire organization that the process is real and applies to everyone. When leadership bypasses the system, everyone else feels licensed to do the same. 4, dual run with a hard sunset. It is acceptable to run both systems for a short transition period, but set a date when the old process ends. We will accept IT requests by email until date. After that, the ticketing system only. Without a sunset, the old process never dies. 5, feedback loops acted on visibly. Ask people what is confusing or broken about the new process. Act on that feedback. Tell people you acted on it. This builds trust in the change and tells people that their input matters. All right, there's a second N in the DRAIN acronym, and that second N stands for Normalize the New Baseline. Process change doesn't stick unless it becomes genuinely the new normal. This happens through celebrating wins publicly. When a team reduces their IT resolution time by 40% because they move from email threads to a ticketing system, talk about it publicly. Make the improvement visible with numbers. Progress that is named gets repeated. Documentation. Write down how processes work. Put it in your wiki. Make it searchable. How do I request a software purchase? Should have a findable answer that any new employee can locate in under 2 minutes. Not passed down through institutional folklore. Written down. Accessible. Onboarding integration. Every new employee's first day should include, here are the systems we use, here is what each one is for, here is how you submit your first request. Not handed down informally by whoever happens to sit next to them. Standard, documented, part of onboarding materials. And lastly, annual re-audit. Once a year, run the DRAIN framework again. Organizations change, teams grow, new types of work emerge. The right tool for 20 people might need to be revisited at 100. The work of building good processes is never fully done. It's an ongoing discipline. Part 9, the rules of every email you do send. Even after you've moved your internal processes to proper tools, you'll still send emails, external communication, formal notices, legitimate asynchronous exchange. So when you do send an email, let's make sure it's a good one. Here are 10 hard rules. Rule 1, every email must have a single stated purpose. Before you write an email, complete this sentence in one line. This email exists to. The valid completions are to inform a person of a specific thing, to ask a person for approval on a specific thing, to ask a person a specific question, to request a specific action from a person by a date, to confirm a special thing in writing following our conversation. If you cannot complete that sentence, do not write the email yet. Get clear on what you want first. And if your email has multiple purposes, you want to inform and ask for approval and raise a separate question, consider whether this should be 3 emails or, better yet, a meeting. Rule 2, the 1-minute test. If it takes you more than 1 minute to write an email, pick up the phone. This is shorthand for, if this is complex enough that you're spending real effort trying to write it clearly, drafting and redrafting, trying to anticipate how someone will interpret your words, worrying about tone, the medium is wrong. Email is for simple, clear, low-turn exchanges. When you find yourself laboring over a message, that friction is your brain telling you that the communication you need cannot be done well by email. Call or schedule a meeting, then write a brief follow-up to confirm what was discussed. That is the correct order. Conversation first, written confirmation after. Rule 3, email is not a novel. No email should be more than 3 short paragraphs. No paragraph should exceed 4 sentences. If you need to convey more context, write a document, attach it, and send a 3-paragraph email summarizing it. Long emails do not get read carefully. They get skimmed. Important details get missed. Responses get delayed because people put off that long email. If your message is important, make it short. Rule 4, the 3-turn rule. Any email exchange requiring more than 3 rounds of replies should become a meeting. Turn 1, the question or request. Turn 2, the response or clarification. Turn 3, the final confirmation. If you're heading into turn 4, you're not converging by email. You will not converge by email. Stop. Get on a call. Reach resolution in 10 minutes instead of 3 days of back and forth. Track this honestly. If you look at your sent mail and find 3 threads going 6, 8, 10 rounds, this is a pattern. It means your complex discussions are using email by default when they need real-time conversation. Rule 5, ban the passive-aggressive phrases. These phrases are banned per my previous email. Say what you need to say directly. Citing your previous email is building a case file, not communicating. Going forward, have the conversation. Don't put corrections in an email. Please advise. Say specifically what you need. Could you let me know how to proceed with X by Thursday? Not sure if you saw my last email. try following up on specific thing. Is there anything blocking this I can help with? Hope this helps. If it helps, it will help without being told it does. Mean what you say. If you can't say it directly, ask yourself whether the relationship issue causing you to reach for these phrases is one that email can solve. Almost always the answer is no. Rule 6. Every recipient must be defensible. Before sending, look at every name in the To, CC, and BCC fields. 2. This person needs to take a specific action. If they don't need to act, they don't belong in the To field. CC. This person genuinely needs to be informed, and they won't be informed by any other means. CC should be rare. If the information is also in a project management tool they have access to, the CC is redundant. If you are CCing for political coverage, remove them and fix the underlying problem instead. BCC. Ask yourself honestly why this needs to be hidden. If the answer is because they would object to being on the email, that is a red flag about the email itself, not just the recipient list. Default to fewer recipients. More recipients means more inbox noise for more people, which means more time lost across the organization. Every unnecessary recipient has a real cost. Rule 7. Subject lines are navigation tools. A subject line should tell the recipient what the email is about, what is required of them, and whether it is urgent before they open it. Good subject lines, for example, approval needed, 5,000 euros, equipment purchase by Friday. Another example, FYI, no response needed, quarterly report published to shared drive. Another example, action required, review contract draft by Thursday EOD. And the last example, question, can you make Tuesday at 2 p.m.? Bad subject lines. Hi. Quick question. Following up. Important. FW meeting. Consider adding prefixes like FYI for no action needed. Action needed for required response. Urgent for genuinely time sensitive. And reserve that last one for things that are genuinely urgent. Update the subject line if the topic changes during a thread. Do not let a thread that started as meeting logistics continue using that subject when it has evolved into a discussion about contract terms. Rule 8. State the ask before the context. Most people write emails in the wrong order. They explain the entire background first, then make the ask at the end. By the time they've written 3 paragraphs of context, the reader has already lost the thread. The correct structure. 1. One sentence stating the purpose and what you need. 2. One or two sentences of relevant context. 3. Any supporting details the recipient needs to act. And 4. The deadline, if applicable. State the purpose first. Then explain why. I need your approval on the attached contract before Friday because the vendor requires it by the end of the month. Not 3 paragraphs of vendor history before the ask. Rule 9. Be explicit about what you need and when. Every email that requires a response needs 2 things, a specific, clear ask and a deadline, or an explicit statement that there is no deadline. Let me know your thoughts is not an ask. Could you review the attached draft and send me 1 paragraph of feedback by Thursday end of day? That's an ask. Get back to me when you can is not a deadline. By end of week is a deadline. And no rush. Whenever you have 15 minutes in the next couple of weeks is genuinely useful because it tells the recipient they can deprioritize this without guilt. Ambiguous emails get deprioritized by default, regardless of how important they are to the sender. Clear emails get answered faster. Rule 10, reply promptly or set expectations. Email creates anxiety when the recipient doesn't know when or whether they'll get a response. This anxiety drives follow-up emails, which drives more volume, which drives more anxiety. The solution? Either reply promptly or send a quick acknowledgement that sets expectations. Got this. I'll come back to you by end of day Thursday with a proper answer. 15 seconds to type. Eliminates 3 days of wondering. If you're going to leave, set an out of office with genuinely useful information, who to contact in your absence, when you'll be back, and whether you'll be checking email at all. Not just, I'm out of office. Give people what they need to decide whether to wait for you or route around you. Part 10, fixing email culture, the organizational change framework. Individual email etiquette is important, but it's not enough. You cannot solve a cultural problem with individual discipline. Lasting change requires organizational change. Here's how to actually make that happen. Step 1, make the business case. Get leadership to recognize that email dysfunction has a measurable cost. Do the math for your organization. Average employee receives 121 emails per day, spends 28% of their work week managing email, 11 hours, at an average fully loaded cost of 50 euros per hour, 550 euros per employee per week, just on email, for a 100-person organization, 50,000 euros per week. 2.7 million euros per year. And that is just the direct cost of the time spent. Add the hidden costs, missed information that costs deals, delayed decisions that miss market windows, employee burnout that drives turnover, knowledge that walks out the door with departing employees. When leadership sees this as a multi-million euro problem per year, they pay attention. When they see it as people complaining about email, it goes on the backlog forever. Step 2. Define written email norms. Create explicit written guidelines for email use in your organization. Include when email is appropriate, when it's not, and the specific etiquette standards expected. Publish these guidelines. Make them part of every new employee's onboarding. Reference them in team meetings. They don't exist if they only live in someone's head. Step 3. Provide better tools and make them genuinely easy to use. You can't tell people to stop using email without giving them something better. And the something better must be genuinely easier for the task at hand, not merely better in theory while being harder in practice. If the new tool is hard to find, hard to use, or produces worse outcomes for the user in the short term, adoption will fail. This is why change management matters as much as tool selection. The tool can be perfect in theory and fail in practice if implementation is poor. Invest in proper training, not a one-hour webinar that nobody retains. Practical, hands-on, here is how to submit your first request in under 5 minutes training for every tool, for every role. Step 4, lead by example without exception. Leadership must model good email behavior. If the CEO sends rambling 10-paragraph emails at 11 p.m. and expects immediate responses, the entire organization will follow. The culture is set from the top. When the CEO submits a support ticket through the proper tool instead of emailing IT directly, that signals to every employee that the system is real and that nobody is exempt. When the CFO uses the approval workflow instead of emailing their EA to handle it, same signal. Leadership adoption is not optional for organizational change to succeed. It's the prerequisite. Step 5. Address the root causes of email overload. Often, email overload is a symptom of deeper organizational problems that email didn't create but reliably amplifies. Unclear roles and accountability lead to CCing everyone just in case. Lack of trust leads to excessive email documentation for self-protection. Poor meeting culture, meetings that don't make decisions, generates endless follow-up email clarifications. Inadequate documentation means the same questions get asked and answered by email repeatedly. Siloed teams generate email to bridge information gaps. Fix these root causes, and email volume will naturally and dramatically decline. Don't treat the symptom while ignoring the disease. Step 6, measure, celebrate, and keep going. Set measurable goals. Track emails sent and received per person per day. Track average time spent in email. Track employee satisfaction with communication tools. Set targets. Reduce average daily emails from 121 to 80 by end of quarter, for example. Then celebrate the wins publicly. We reduced company-wide email volume by 30% this quarter. That's 30 hours of productivity per week reclaimed for actual work. Put the number on it. Make the improvement visible and concrete. Progress that is named and celebrated gets sustained and built upon. Part 11, the vision, what your inbox should look like. Let me paint you a clear picture of what a healthy email environment looks like, not as aspirational fiction, but as a description of how well-run organizations actually operate. You open your laptop Monday morning. You have 9 new emails. Email 1, A new task has been assigned to you in Asana. Review the Peterson contract draft. You click the link. The task is in Asana with all context, the contract attached, the deadline clear, the background notes from the client meeting already documented there by your colleague. You review it. You mark it complete. You archive the notification. Time in email, 8 seconds. Email 2. Your colleague commented on the Q3 strategy document. You click the link. Her comment is in the document. You respond to it there. Archive the notification. Time in email, 5 seconds. Email 3. An email from a client asking to schedule a call. You reply, happy to. Here's my calendar link. Link. Pick a time that works for you. You archive it. Time in email, 45 seconds. Email 4. Your manager saying, great job on the Peterson proposal. Client was very happy. You smile. You reply, thank you. Archive. Time in email, 20 seconds. Email 5. A colleague asking a question that is already answered in your knowledge base. You reply with the link and archive it. Time in email, 30 seconds. Email 6. Your weekly industry newsletter. You skim the headlines, click one interesting article, read it, archive the email. Time in email, 4 minutes. Email 7. A notification that the monthly financial report is ready. You click the link. Access the report in the reporting system. Save it where it belongs. Archive the notification. Time in email, 1 minute. Email 8. An external vendor with a question about a project specification. You answer it. Linking to the relevant spec document in your shared drive. Archive. Time in email, 2 minutes. Email 9. Spam. Delete. 2 seconds. Total time in email, under 20 minutes. The actual work, the contract review, the strategy comment, the report analysis, happened in proper tools where that work belongs. Email was the notification layer, not the work itself. You check email twice more during the day. Total email time for the day, 45 minutes, down from 3 hours, and nothing fell through the cracks because nothing important lived in email to begin with. That is the vision. Email as a utility, useful for the narrow, specific things it's actually good at, not a dumping ground, not an operating system, a tool. I want to be honest about something because pretending it doesn't exist will cause your change effort to fail. Every organization has people who are protective of their email-based processes. Not because they love suffering, but because when a process lives in someone's inbox, that person is the gatekeeper. They control the information. They decide when things move forward. Their email is expertise. Knowing who to CC, knowing the history, knowing the shortcuts. It's institutional knowledge that makes them valuable and, frankly, powerful. When you move a process to a proper system, that gatekeeping power dissolves. The system has the history. Anyone with access can see the status. Routing is automatic. The gatekeeper is no longer needed as a gatekeeper. This is a genuine loss for some people, and you need to acknowledge it rather than dismiss it. The reframe. The person who spent 60% of their week processing email requests can now spend that time on analysis, on relationships, on strategy, work that is far more valuable to the organization and far more satisfying to the individual. Frame the change as liberation from email toil, not as a reduction of their importance. For most people, that is genuinely what it is. Part 12, action items and closing. We've covered a lot of ground. An hour and a half. The entire history, the complete diagnosis, the full framework, and the rules. Let me close with concrete, specific things you can do right now. Audit your email habits this week. Track how many emails you send and receive per day. Track how much time you spend in email. Categorize your emails using the 10 categories from the DRAIN framework. This gives you a baseline. You cannot improve what you have not measured. Unsubscribe from newsletters you never read. If you haven't opened the last 5 from a sender, you're not going to. Be ruthless. Reduce inbound volume at the source. Batch process email at scheduled times. Check email only at set intervals, say 9 a.m., 1 p.m., and 4 p.m., rather than reacting to every message as it arrives. Turn off real-time notifications. This change alone typically reduces email-related stress significantly within 1 week. Move one regular email communication to a better tool this week. Weekly status update emails? Move them to your project management tool. Common knowledge questions? write a wiki page. Meeting schedule back and forth, set up a calendar link. Pick one thing and move it. Create templates for your three most common outbound emails. If you send similar requests or updates frequently, build templates. Saves time, ensures completeness, and improves consistency. Here are some team actions that require a conversation. Have a team discussion about email pain points. Get everyone's input. What is most frustrating? What wastes the most time? What do people wish worked differently? You may find strong consensus around one or two processes that are clearly causing disproportionate pain. Agree on one email norm as a team. Just one. Maybe it's no reply all unless everyone needs to see it. Maybe it's all IT requests go through the form, not personal email. Pick one, commit to it for 30 days, then review whether it helped. Move one process out of email together. Project status updates, task assignments, knowledge sharing. Pick one. Choose the right tool together and migrate it. Doing it as a team is essential. Unilateral process changes fail. Start a shared knowledge base for common questions. Begin with your five most frequently asked questions. Answer them once in a shared document or wiki page. Link to it when someone asks by email. Build it up over time. Your two homework items. Before this week ends, do exactly two things. First, audit your inbox. Take your last 50 received emails and categorize every single one. For each, ask, was email the right tool for this? Put each one into a bucket. Should have been a PM tool notification. Should have been a knowledge base article. Should have been a Slack message. Actually, a legitimate email. Count the buckets. The results will show you where the dysfunction is concentrated. Second, pick one improvement. Just one. Maybe, I'm going to stop using my inbox as a task list and move everything to a proper task manager. Maybe I'm going to document our three most common processes in the wiki this week. Maybe I'm going to move our weekly project status updates out of email and into our project management tool. One change, start there. You do not have to fix email completely. You just have to start moving in the right direction. Small improvements compound over time. Email is not the enemy. Email is a tool. A genuinely good tool for the narrow set of things it was designed for. Brief, asynchronous messages between people who don't share a common system. The problem is that we've overloaded it beyond all recognition. We've asked it to be a database, a filing cabinet, a project manager, a task tracker, a knowledge base, and a collaboration platform simultaneously, none of which it was ever built to be. The answer is not better email etiquette, though that matters. The answer is not AI that reads and writes more emails on your behalf. That is an arms race that nobody wins. The answer is not managing your inbox more efficiently. The answer is designing processes that never needed the email in the first place. The answer is an intake form, where a vague email request used to be. A ticket where a thread used to be. A shared dashboard where a status request email used to be. A workflow where an approval chain used to be. A wiki page where a long explanatory email used to be. The answer is structure, not more words. When you replace an email process with a proper system, you don't just make that process faster. You make it measurable. You make it resilient. It survives when key people leave. It scales without adding headcount to manage it. You free the people who ran it manually to do work that actually requires a human brain. And the email you send it with clarity, with brevity, and with purpose. You say what you mean. You ask for what you need. You make it easy for the recipient to respond. And you respect their time the way you wish others respected yours. That is the vision. That is the work. And it starts the moment you close this episode and look at your inbox, not as a task list you have to survive, but as evidence of processes you have the power to fix. This podcast is available on all the major platforms, live every Friday on LinkedIn, and then available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. No matter where you're getting this content, could I ask you to tickle the algorithm and like, subscribe, comment, and share to help us grow and help more people? It's greatly appreciated. Just search for Automate Office Work or go to automateofficework.com and there's a podcast section showing you our 80 plus episodes and links to all the platforms. Now back to the episode. An hour and a half later, let's recap everything we covered. We started with the history. From Ray Tomlinson's 1971 message between two computers on a tiny government network, through the corporate email revolution of the 1980s, through the always-on mobile email culture of the 2000s, through the parallel notifications of the 2010s, to the drowning inbox of today, we defined where email is genuinely the right tool. External parties, formal documentation, simple single-turn exchanges, cross-time zone async communication, a short, precise list, and we got honest about everything that's not on that list. We met Jennifer. We watched email dysfunction build gradually over 5 years, each individual email reasonable, the cumulative result catastrophic. We diagnosed 12 specific structural failures. Email as a fake database, the asymmetry problem, inbox as a task list, thread chaos, zero access control, CC toxicity, knowledge burial, the departure time bomb, the who do I email problem, the approval chain black hole, the status update tax, and the vocabulary of passive aggression. We argued clearly and directly that AI writing and reading more emails is not the answer. It's an arms race that makes the inbox worse. The answer is to never send the email in the first place. We described what proper intake forms and purpose-built systems do that email can't. We mapped every category of email misuse to the right replacement tool. We described the Amazon principle. Meet users exactly where they are, with exactly the context they need, and route everything automatically through structured data. We walked through the 5 process maturity levels, from level 1, where the inbox is your operating system, to level 5, where routine work is automated and humans focus on what genuinely requires a human. We gave you the DRAIN, D-R-A-I-N, framework. Define, rate, audit, identify, navigate, and normalize. A practical audit your team can run starting this week. We gave you 10 hard rules for every email you do send. Single purpose, the 1-minute test, maximum 3 paragraphs, the 3-turn rule, no passive-aggressive phrases, defensible recipients, subject lines as navigation, ask before context, explicit asks with deadlines, and prompt acknowledgement. And we gave you the organizational change framework. Make the business case with real numbers. Write down your norms. Provide tools that are genuinely easy to use. Lead by example without exception. Address the root causes and measure everything. The inbox you have is not inevitable. It is the accumulated result of processes that haven't been designed yet. You have the power to design them. If this episode changed how you think about email in your organization, share it with your team. Share it with your manager. Share it with the person who just added 17 people to a reply all chain about where the quarterly report is saved. Show notes. The DRAIN framework worksheet. The 10 rules checklist. The tool replacement map. And the process maturity self-assessment are all in the episode description. Thank you for the hour and a half you spent with me on this. I'm your host, Justin. This has been Automate Office Work. And happy automating.